First of all, I just not all of the senators are here yet, but I would like to just welcome a couple of new members we have. Senator Koch is joining us, and we're very excited to have her, and Senator Eaton, who I believe will be sitting at the end there and hasn't quite got over here yet, but I'm sure will be joining us shortly. So we're very happy to have both of them on the committee this year. Today, we're going to just go through the capital investment proposals from both MinSCU and the university today, and so that the committee members can get a better idea of what they're looking for this year in bonding projects. So I guess we will go ahead and start with MinSCU, and I believe the chancellor is going to. We've also have Brian Yolitz, who is the associate vice chancellor for facilities. So please, gentlemen, join us at the table, and whenever you're ready, please go ahead. Thank you for being here, both of you.
Thank you, Chair Fischbach, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be with you today. It's also a pleasure to be with so many of my former colleagues in the same room to be able to share with you the needs of higher education. We're going to talk with you the investment priorities that will help Minnesota State colleges and universities ensure access to an extraordinary education for all Minnesotans, meet Minnesota's workforce needs, and keep us the most affordable, most cost-effective higher education alternative to serve more than 400,000 students across our state. Joining me today is Brian Yolitz, our Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities. In his role, he plays both leadership in the prioritization of our capital projects, but also the execution of our capital projects. Brian joined us just a little over a year ago after serving as a colonel in the United States Air Force. And he brings 27 years of logistics and facilities management expertise to MinSCU, and we're very appreciative of him being part of our team. There are several presidents from our colleges and universities who are with us today that I'd like to mention. President Davenport from Minnesota State University Mankato, Richard Trubb from Minnesota West Community and Technical College, Robert Musgrove from Pine Tech Technical College, Doug Allen from Ridgewater, Don Cipolla from Rochester, and Rasmul Desmond from St. Paul College.
Chancellor, I'd just like to say I thank all the presidents for joining us today, too. That's very nice of them to come down and join us today at the committee.
So. We have provided you copies of our bonding book, which contain the details of each of our projects. We also have a handout detailing the execution plan that we have in place. Our investments are focused on the infrastructure needed to advance Minnesota's workforce, both to improve the learning spaces needed to support the growing need for scientists, health professionals, engineers, precision machinists, technologists, and other skills, all of which are in short supply. Our request falls into two main areas. First, the desire through HEPR to protect the workforce training facilities we have, to keep them safe, efficient, dry, warm, and code compliant. And secondly, to address the workforce skills gap that exists in Minnesota with projects that are providing the classrooms and laboratories required to deliver to business and industry, the graduates that will provide them the skills needed for current and for future workforce needs. Each project we'll be discussing has been vetted through a very rigorous prioritization process. We are presenting today only our most urgent needs, which represent approximately one-third of the $900 million pipeline of projects going forward. These are the most pressing investment needs for the system. As you'll see in a moment, we're also extremely effective and efficient in our implementation of projects, immediately putting them in the ground to create jobs and put people to work throughout Minnesota. And what distinguishes all of our projects from many of the projects that will be considered by your colleagues when you craft a bonding bill is that not only do our projects put people to work in the execution of the projects, but all of our projects are designed to provide the learning spaces necessary to train workers for the work that needs to be done in Minnesota. Many of you have visited our campuses and have seen the projects to gain a deeper understanding of our needs, and I thank you for your interest and the time that you've devoted to doing that. Our goal today is to provide both the details and to give a little broader framing for the investment imperatives. And, of course, I welcome your questions at any time. I'll talk about the strategic direction of the system, of our colleges and universities, and Brian will walk us through the individual projects to show you the way in which their priorities to meet the workforce and skills gap issues that Minnesota's confronting and how their impact will shape the entire state. Preparing Minnesota's workforce with the job skills required by business and industry is the core mission of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And in my first few months in the job, I can tell you how deeply impressed I've been with the broad and very deep impact that our system has, not just on students, but on our state's economy, on citizens, and on communities across our state. This request is on behalf of 31 colleges and universities. And as you know, these campuses are an integral part of the economic vitality of 47 communities across our state. Our physical plant of a little over 850 buildings and nearly 27 million square feet is roughly one-third of all the buildings in the state of Minnesota that are state buildings. This is where the teaching and learning and job training happens in our colleges and universities. Over the past decade, demand for our programs has soared. Enrollment is up 15%, and investment in our facilities is needed to keep pace with this increase in the number of students we are serving. Today, we serve over 400,000 Minnesotans in communities across the state. More than 80% of the new nurses, construction trades workers, cops, and mechanics, over 9,000 firefighters and first responders each year, civil engineers, city managers, CPAs, entrepreneurs, that is, the professionals who lead every sector of Minnesota's economy. And with 80% of our graduates staying right here in Minnesota, either go directly to work or to continue their education, they have a huge impact. Our colleges and universities have ongoing partnerships with 6,000 businesses across Minnesota, providing customized training to over 120,000 employees each year to keep those firms competitive. At the same time, we also continue to manage our resources very prudently. Over the past 10 years, the real cost of educating a Minscu student is down 10%. Now, who pays that cost has shifted, obviously, as the state has withdrawn its support and put more of the burden on students. But the cost of a Minscu education per student in real dollars is 10% lower than it was a decade ago. The productivity in terms of credit hours per square foot is up 20%. Our faculty productivity has improved 7%. And compared to other systems of higher education around the country, the administrative overhead per student we're serving puts us 37 out of 50. And that's the kind of race where you want to be near the bottom of the list rather than the top of the list. And that continued improvement continues. Minscu serves 60% of all the undergraduate students in the state of Minnesota. And the diversity of our programs includes highly skilled two-year technical programs, which deliver a wide spectrum of facilities that extend well beyond the typical classroom or even the typical lab. Let me just give you a couple examples to make it vivid. In our health and medical programs, whether it's cardiovascular technology, dental hygiene, paramedics, nursing, radiology, or surgical assistance program, they require simulation labs, mock surgical suites, radiology rooms, and even rescue squad vehicles that replicate the environments that students will experience in the world of work. Our programs in manufacturing and robotics require clean spaces to house the latest computer technology that aid grinders and lathes, but also spaces to power the HVA systems that are necessary and to keep the space safe and clean for students. Our heavy equipment and diesel tractor, trailer, operator, and maintenance programs require not only space to drive and operate construction loaders and scrapers and bulldozers, but also the indoor spaces to tear down that equipment and put it back together so students understand how to do that. And our law enforcement programs require live firing ranges and buildings that house mock-ups for scenario-based response technique training, all necessary to ensure that when cops get on the street, they are safe and can respond in appropriate ways. These kinds of facilities, along with classrooms and laboratories, enable our faculty to train people to meet Minnesota's workforce needs. And as you know, we serve more than the traditional 19-year-old. We're the place that working adults go to complete certificates, 2-year and 4-year degrees, as well as graduate programs. We're the place people go when they've been displaced from jobs, when it's time to update their skills, or when they wish to prepare for a new career. We're the place where businesses, large and small, go when they need training for their employees or when they need help solving practical problems. This is why we are uniquely positioned to help our state's economy and why investment in our facilities, our workforce training facilities, is so crucial to our state's prosperity. The essential role we play in growing the state's economy and opening the doors of educational opportunity for all Minnesotans is our core mission. And under the strategic framework unanimously adopted by our Board of Trustees, we are committed to 3 things. We're committed to ensuring access to an extraordinary education for all Minnesotans. We're committed to being the partner of choice for business and communities across Minnesota, to help them solve real-world problems and to help them meet their workforce needs. And finally, we're committed to delivering to students, employers, communities, and taxpayers the highest value, most affordable higher education option in the state of Minnesota. And each one of these commitments is core to meeting Minnesota's workforce needs, both today and in the future. Now, as someone who's new to the MinSCU system, I have to tell you how impressed I am with the rigor of the prioritization process. Every project's aligned with a campus master plan and the Board of Trustees guidelines. Project pre-designs are reviewed and scored by professionals from across our colleges and universities. The board reviews and approves each project. I participated in the final crafting of our request and underscored a couple key principles. First, our projects must advance strategic priorities of access, quality, workforce, and value. We must minimize new square footage. We must take care of what we have. We must make it more efficient and more flexible. We must be willing to demolish or mothball what is no longer viable in terms of conditions, operating costs, and programs. And we should only consider new square footage if it meets all 3 of the imperatives that the board has identified in the strategic framework. One final point before I turn the presentation over to Brian. This slide shows the status of the investments that you approved last year. As you can see, we are very effective in our execution. Implementation is quick, immediate, and it creates immediate jobs, putting thousands of Minnesotans to work in communities across our entire state. $30 million of essential HEPA repairs were deployed to our campuses in the form of 82 projects that employ Minnesotans working in 229 local contractors and subcontracting firms. We're on track to having 90% of these funds encumbered by March 31st. The $102 million identified for 7 major capital projects to address workforce and skills gap needs of business and industry are all under contract with 138 firms across Minnesota. 5 are already in the ground, 2 are in the process of final design and pre-construction, 100% on track to get these funds allocated and spent in the coming year. With that as a backdrop, let me ask Brian to walk through the details of our projects, and we'll both stand for any of your questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. Yolitz.
Madam Chair, Committee, good afternoon. It's good to be with you all this afternoon to discuss our capital requirements. In support of our capital improvement program, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities requests $222.5 million in state funding to be combined with $56.2 million from system funds to execute a $278.7 million program supporting Minnesota's workforce training and development for 2012. This is the system's smallest request since fiscal year 2000. The capital program is made up of 3 elements: $110 million for higher education asset preservation and replacement, or HEPR needs, focused on essential repairs and renewal of existing facility spaces, directly supporting workforce programs across the system. $157.1 million funds 22 major capital projects at 21 college and university campuses. 14 of the 22 projects, or approximately $120 million, has been presented in prior capital requests, but ultimately was not funded at the end of the sessions. In addition, $11.6 million funds three system initiatives where we've bundled projects on the size of $200,000 to $1.5 million range in specific focused workforce areas at multiple campuses. This request focuses on workforce areas of science and technology, engineering and math, or STEM, energy, and classrooms, and pursues 21 projects at 14 campuses within the system. All projects are shovel-ready. We define shovel-ready as being poised and ready to move to that next phase of design or construction. We recognize that carpenters, electricians, sheet metal workers, painters, welders, and equipment operators can't work until engineers, architects, and draftsmen and surveyors have done their work. Color chart that I believe each of you have in your packages reflects our execution strategy for each of the projects in our program. The color hash marks correspond to the various phases of design and construction, show how we deliver those projects throughout the construction cycle. The red and green elements reflect the design phases of A&E selection, schematic design, design development, and construction document preparation, while the yellow and blue elements show the award and or bid and award periods, along with the actual construction punch list and final project closeout. The HEPR request for $110 million funds nearly 135 projects, generating multiple contracts at 53 of our campuses. It reflects our Board of Trustees' number one requirement in terms of capital funding. Over 95% of the investment is in existing facility infrastructure repairs, in the renewal and preservation of both interior and exterior of our physical plant, addresses aging systems within those facilities, making them more efficient, more effective, and ultimately reducing operating expenses for our campuses. The balance addresses code and standard compliance issues and accomplishes some advanced design for some of the more complex HEPA requirements we have in future requests in terms of repair and renewal needs. The HEPA portion of our request is critical to our campuses, and it's important to recognize the HEPA is much more than just the buildings or the systems we talk about in the titles of the projects. It's about the workforce training and learning spaces they serve and protect. HEPA is about protecting and sustaining workforce training capacity. To underscore this point, here are four of the many HEPA requirements we seek to address. First, at St. Cloud Technical and Community College, $1.4 million replaces three nearly 50-year-old boilers with five smaller, more highly efficient boilers serving the 380,000 square feet of the main building, housing their workforce programs including carpentry, auto body, diesel mechanics, electrical, plumbing, HVAC, and metal programs, as well as the transfer programs at the college in St. Cloud. This also makes the campus more operationally efficient and drives down their operating expenses. We funded initial design of this work in fiscal year 2011 to get us a jump on this project and should be ready to a bid and award in June of this year. In North Mankato at our South Central College campus, $2 million replaces 90,000 square feet of roofing over the building areas A and E, where leaks are negatively impacting library and student commons, as well as science, math, English, chemistry, biology classrooms, and labs. Anoka Ramsey at the Cambridge campus also has roof issues. $988,000 will address the roof leaks there over our allied health programs and STEM classrooms and labs. Just up the road from here at Metropolitan State University, $350,000 is needed to replace and update the chiller towers and integral piping elements of the chiller system supporting the entire campus. Chiller System moderates conditions in their workforce training and development spaces for nursing, human services, as well as their liberal arts programs. It also makes their campus operations more cost-effective. Each of our projects in our plan has a story just like these. Again, HEPR is about protecting and sustaining workforce capacity for Minnesota. Our 22 major line item capital projects and three initiatives are focused on supporting the workforce needs of the communities surrounding our campuses and our state as a whole. The projects touch technical labs, STEM, allied health, as well as the general education and baccalaureate needs for the workforce. Many projects touch more than one of these areas, with nine impacting all five. I'd like to call your attention to the bonding book that we've provided in each of your packages. It gives an overview of our program. I'd like to walk you through just a couple of things. On the inside cover, page one reflects our capital requirements as prioritized by our Board of Trustees. And then we've also, internal to the document, highlighted those projects and the workforces that they support. On the next page, or page two, reflects the HEPR requirements, along with the first of our projects at Minneapolis Community Technical College for $13.8 million. On page three reflects projects at Willmar and Worthington, both projects that you've had in front of the legislature in the past.
Excuse me, Mr. Yolitz, I believe Senator Pappas has a question. Senator Pappas?
Thank you. Mr. Yolitz is the new Al, right? And Chancellor, the new Jim. Welcome. I think it's helpful to have a breakdown of all the HEPR projects so you see all over the state who's impacted. And I think we've had that in the past, and so if you wouldn't mind providing that for me and anyone else in the committee, I would like that.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, we've got a copy of that, and I think we'll, if it hasn't been distributed already, we'll get it to staff so you can get that in your hands.
Thank you, Mr. Yolitz. I don't see it, but so if we can get a hold of it. I don't see it in the packet today, but we'll get a copy of that.
Make certain you get it.
Thank you. Mr. Yolitz, if you have more.
Very good. On pages four and five reflect four more projects at Faribault, Coon Rapids, Brooklyn Park, as well as Marshall, all projects that have been presented in the past capital requests but ultimately not funded. On page six reflects two new projects to the capital program, one at St. Paul College, one at Century College, reflecting the demand for workforce training at those two campuses. We're very excited about those projects going forward. Then on page seven reflects workforce needs at Rosemount, as well as a workforce center co-location at our RCTC campus in Rochester. Pages eight and nine reflect STEM, first of all, a STEM initiative at nine of our campuses for 10 projects, and the details are on the far left-hand side of page eight. And then the remainder is projects at Mankato, Bemidji, as well as St. Paul here at Metropolitan State University. That science edition is in response to the funding for the design of that project that happened in the fiscal year 11 program. We're very excited about that, helping meet the baccalaureate needs in the metropolitan area. Page 10 and 11 reflect projects at Rochester, as well as the Staples campus of Central Lakes College, Grand Rapids, and Albert Lea. Page 12 shows our initiatives in the areas of energy and classrooms. The energy initiative, that's six projects at six different campuses, focusing on energy training and of the workforce. The classrooms are five projects at four of our campuses, infusing needed upgrades of the training spaces on those campuses. And then on page 13, Minnesota State College, State Community and Technical College at Moorhead, their transportation center, is an important project advancing their diesel and technology programs. And then at Winona State, their business and classroom renovation work is an important advancement of their master plan at that campus. Finally, on page 14, St. Cloud Community and Technical and Community College, their medium truck program, the need of repairs of their facilities, spaces, and then finally at Alexandria Technical College, our main building renovation to take care of the needs of that facility. All told, our total capital program directly supports workforce training and development across the state, from the Northeast and the classroom renovation in Ely at our Vermilion Community College and the heaper work at Rainy River Community College in International Falls, to the Transportation and Diesel Technology Center renovation and nursing lab work within the STEM initiative in Moorhead, to energy and advanced diesel technology programs in Canby, power line training programs in Jackson, and classroom renovations in Faribault. It makes an enormously positive impact on our institutions where workforce learning takes place. In summary, our investments are focused on the infrastructure necessary for advancing Minnesota's workforce. The $278.7 million capital program seeks $222.5 million in state financing with $56.2 million from system resources. It addresses essential repairs and workforce skills gap-driven projects required to deliver to business and industry graduates with the education and skills required to meet the current and future needs. Each project has been through a rigorous vetting and prioritization process. We are committed to being very efficient and effective in the delivery and execution of these projects and quickly creating jobs that will put thousands of Minnesotans to work in the local communities throughout our state. I guess it would be the former Jim and former Al. We stand ready to answer any questions that you may have. We thank you for your time and attention this afternoon.
Thank you very much. There are questions from the committee. I saw Senator Carlson. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Yolitz, the $30 million that was appropriated last year for HEPA projects, and then I see the $110 million that's requesting, was the $110 million, did that include that $30 million, or is this an additional I was confused. I thought that perhaps there had been $110 million overall in that two-year period, and so I was under the impression we were down to $80 million, but that's not correct. Is that?
Mr. Yolitz.
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, we look at a biennium requirement. All of our modeling for investments in our infrastructure is based on a biennium. We need about $110 million every biennium. We looked at those in the 10 and 11 as a biennium request. We had about $82 million if you combine the fiscal year 10 program, $52 million and $30 million in fiscal year 11. And now we're back. Is this biennial request seeking $110 million as part of our investment needs? So I guess depending on how we align the numbers, we need $110 million. Our backlog is for these kind of academic facilities is on the order of $650 million. We've got an annual renewal of about $80 million. And this HEPA investment is going to get after both of those.
Right.
Follow-up, Senator Carlson.
So it is an additional 110 over the 30 that was already appropriated.
Madam Mr. Chair, Senator Yolitz. Carlson, that's correct.
And then just one more question.
Senator Carlson.
In the breakdown of the HEPA products or the projects, the area that was the largest was the HVAC in the energy area. What I was curious about is how much of that is just HVAC and how much of it is energy improvements. And with the energy improvements, could you explain to us, because I understand that there's a significant cost savings that come along with doing some energy improvements, and maybe just for the benefit of all of us, how much we could expect as a return. And we're not just dumping money into a building, we're actually going to be reducing future costs, and maybe that would be helpful for us to hear that.
Mr. Yolitz.
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, I don't have a specific number for you, but I can tell you as we do one thing in terms of focused on energy efficiency, energy control systems to moderate our HVAC systems, be able to shut them down when the rooms aren't being utilized, turn off lights and that kind of stuff. That's one element making an impact. But also as we do, as I described, in installing new, more efficient boilers, new, more efficient variable speed HVAC systems in your fans, we continue to receive it's kind of an additional benefit, energy savings. Same with the roof, same with the exterior. We impede air penetration, whether it's in the summertime or the balmy season we're having here in the wintertime. It all helps towards energy efficiency.
Senator Latz, and then Senator Roebling. Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, Mr. Yolitz, you've got the HEPR listed as the number one priority. And if we were only to have $110 million to give to MNSCU for their total capital budget request this year, would you prioritize all of that to go into HEPR, or would you subdivide some of that to capture some of the other projects that are listed in the book? And how would you divide that up?
Mr. Yolitz.
Madam Chair, Senator Lotz, I believe that depending on how it was issued to us from the capital investment committees, we wouldn't be able to fund a line item project with HEPR dollars. I may be wrong there, but I think that would be the case. But it would be our Board of Trustees' desire would be to execute all the HEPR. If we got $110 million for HEPR, we'd do HEPR work. I know during our discussions, and I believe the Chancellor will probably pile on a bit, but during our discussions with a Board of Trustees, they were focused on taking care of the facilities we have, doing the HEPR work, taking a very close look at the capital projects we're seeking and what kind of HEPR-like work is embedded in those projects as we renovate and repair those facilities. So HEPR is our number one priority in terms of investments and taking care of what we have in terms of state resources.
Chancellor.
Chair Fischbach, Senator Lutz, we look forward to having a discussion of how to spend $110 million in bonding this coming year. So if that's the ballpark we're in, we'll be happy to work with you on the details, I assure you. That being said, there are some places where you can be penny-wise and dollar-foolish. There are simply some buildings not worth investing further in and repairing where it makes much more sense to create the new facility. And in some cases, we are proposing taking buildings offline and putting facilities in conditions and places where they're most necessary. So putting 100% of all your funds just in existing facilities and not being able to invest in the places where you need new facilities to be more effective and efficient, I think would be a mistake. Secondly, part of what we need to pay attention to is the evolving needs of the marketplace and the evolving needs for workforce. That sometimes means new facilities. We also need to pay attention to where population has changed in our state and where the demand is higher than we ever imagined 5 or 10 years ago, as you saw on that chart. That drives the need for certain kinds of facilities, both the market demanding certain kinds of training programs and the population student demand demanding certain kinds of facilities, where if we put all of our eggs in one basket, I think we'd be making a mistake in not doing the job that the state expects us to do with respect to workforce. So, Madam Chair, if we do have $110 million to work with, we will work with this committee and your colleagues in figuring out how best to get that balance.
Senator Latz.
Thank you, Chancellor. I appreciate that. I personally like to prefer to prioritize HEPR over everything else, but this committee typically gives a portion of a HEPR request and spreads other money out, whatever the available money is for this portion of the capital budget, to other projects around the state. That's why I think what Senator Pappas has asked for would be very helpful. So we see the statewide impact of HEPR. But I think it would be helpful also for the committee if you could help us prioritize, if we were to assume that that some money is going to go into individual projects and not into HEPR, no matter what our number turns out to be. I think it'd be helpful if we had some sense of your priorities for that as well. That if there's only $50 million available total, and if you want all of that to go into HEPR, I'd like to know that. If you want of that, you really think you got to get your priority number two on the list here funded in there, and you're willing to give up some HEPR to do that, I think that would help us be able to prioritize within the next group of projects as well, or even help us prioritize within the HEPR projects if that were helpful.
Senator Fischbach, Senator Lutz, when we get down the road and know exactly what ballpark we're in, we'll know exactly better how to make those kinds of trade-offs. But in the abstract, to make the trade-off, not knowing which projects on the HEPR list are at the critical point of breaking down and disrupting programs, until we know what ballpark we're in, it's going to be a little hard to understand exactly how to make those trade-offs. On the projects themselves, the book describes the priorities that our board has set for those projects, and we will not deviate from that list, and we ask you to also respect the hard choices that were made with respect to the prioritization. but this trade-off you're suggesting is one that we'll be happy to work with you with when we know what number we're really working from.
Thank you. And, Madam Chair, just to comment, then I would ask that the chair of the committee and the staff, when it gets to the point of deciding how to divvy up whatever our number is, that we specifically solicit from the system the kind of information in terms of priorities that I've just mentioned so that it could be factored in.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Senator Robley.
Thank you. Mr. Yolitz, I'm wondering, we still have the same policy, don't we, that if it's a HEPR project, it's 100% funded by the state, but if it's a new construction project, it is one-third paid for by the campus, probably through tuition or whatever means?
Mr. Yolitz.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, indeed. For HEPR requirements, the full debt is carried by the state of Minnesota. For those line item projects, those 22 projects and three initiatives I talked about, one-third of the debt is serviced by the system. And that one-third then is divided, one-half of that, or one-sixth of the total debt, is carried by the system right off the top. And then the other half, or a sixth, is carried by the gaining campus. And indeed, those would be serviced via appropriations and tuition and other revenues.
Senator Roebling.
And so when we have projects that move into, like when you talk about classroom renovations, and I imagine that what defines them as HEPR, or what moves them into these other project areas? Because some of them kind of sound like HEPR, but are they renovating such a high percentage of the facility that it falls into more new construction, or how do you make the determination?
Mr. Yolitz.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, indeed, size has some an element to do with it, but also the way the HEPR language is written, oftentimes we find it, because these buildings were built in the 50s and 60s, we need to reconfigure, put new programs in, and the way the language is, it calls for HEPR to not change the programmatic makeup of some of the spaces. So because of the size, and because we're changing programs that are supported after a renovation project, then we end up going to a major capital project, a line item project, where the debt service has to be carried by the system.
Senator Roebling.
And then I noticed, for example, like on the classroom renovations, that it said renovate to create two technology-enhanced classrooms. And I don't think we can bond for technology. So when you have to put technology into these facilities, how is that handled?
Mr. Yolitz.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, the technology piece is indeed is funded through campus operating dollars. It's the way we configure the classrooms. The classrooms of today are not theater type seating. We're trying to create open spaces where during one training session or class session, tables are all huddled in little pods, and then they're broken down into more of a typical lecture space. And then others will move furniture around and have individual screens on the wall, working in individual pods. It's just creating those spaces that are more flexible to meet the learning needs of the teaching style of the faculty member to help the students become as effective as possible. So it's about the way we put the space in place and then put the technology in afterwards.
So,
Senator Roebling.
So when you wire something, though, for the technology that you will put in place with operating budget, can that be included in the cost of the building? Would that be like the electrical system, and then the technology system? Can that be included in your estimate here?
Mr. Yolitz.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, the conduits and the wires to get the basic infrastructure to the room is all in the capital request. It's the hanging on stuff, technical term. It's this stuff in the screens on the wall that are not. Is that helpful?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the committee for Jim and Al?
No. Sorry about that.
Well, I don't see any other questions, so thank you very, very much, Chancellor Rosenstone and Mr. Yolitz. We will now stop calling you Jim and Al.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I'm just, I'm giving him just a minute to switch over because then we will ask President Kaler and Ms. O'Brien and Ms. Black to join us. So as soon as you're able. Are we set?
We are, Madam Chair.
Technology is wonderful. And thank you for joining us today. And we have President Kaler, and I'm sorry.
Kathleen O'Brien, the Vice President for University Services.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. And so whenever you're ready.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, good afternoon. And thank you for having us here with you today. I'm joined today by Regent Chair Linda Cohen, Regent Patricia Simmons, as well as by, there we go, thank you, as well as by Richard Fitzenreuter, the university's Chief Financial Officer, and Kathleen O'Brien, our Vice President for University Services. I would also like to recognize the University of Minnesota Duluth Chancellor Lynn Black, who, with your agreement, will be presenting our Duluth project. Dean Robert Eldy is also here to provide answers to questions we may have about our Itasca project, and we also have a University of Minnesota faculty and students with us this afternoon.
Thank you.
This is my very first legislative hearing since becoming president of the university on July 1st of last year. And before I begin with the specifics, I want you to know that I am committed to leading a responsive and transparent administration. Please do not hesitate to contact me or members of my staff if you have questions or need any additional information about the university. Let me begin briefly with the mission of the University of Minnesota. With our nearly 70,000 students, our 25,000 employees, our five campuses, our extension, and our research and outreach centers, which touch all 87 counties. Our mission is carried out on five campuses: Crookston, Duluth, Morris, Rochester, and the Twin Cities, at 14 regional extension offices and 11 research and outreach centers throughout the state. Through our extension and outreach, cultural, athletic, clinical, and youth development programs, we directly impact millions of Minnesotans annually. The U is unique among Minnesota's more than 30 public and its two dozen or so private, nonprofit, and for-profit institutions. We are our state's only public land-grant research institution. And let me see if I could show you what that means.
Designing software for prototypes. His team will present to kids and industry professionals. Lindsay is finding out whether a tiny bug could have been Minnesota's 930 storage devices for electronics. Jeff is monitoring the health of streams along the North Shore. Scott is designing power without having to analyzing markets to help small businesses grow. While she completed medical school and trained for the Olympics. Toby is experimenting with energy-producing crops that will maintain soil quality. Summer is extending the art of storytelling through dance and choreography. Two-thirds of these students will stay here when they graduate. They'll be our leaders and our entrepreneurs. They'll be our smart workforce for new and growing industries. They'll be our teachers and healers, our artists and engineers. They'll make Minnesota a vibrant place to live.
So last fall, we enrolled 44,000 undergraduates and 18,000 graduate and professional students on our campuses, with another 7,000 non-degree students for good measure. And those students, in addition to becoming trained for careers and contributions to the economy, drive innovation, drive new ideas, and drive the future of the state of Minnesota. We award about 14,000 degrees annually, delivering to the state some of the best qualified, critically thoughtful, highly skilled, and curious talent in the nation. These degrees include 90% of Minnesota's STEM doctoral degrees, 85% of Minnesota's physicians, and 100% of Minnesota's graduates in dentistry, pharmacy, and vet med. As you can see, the quality of our entering class was also our best ever, and we are attracting and retaining the state's best and brightest students. That excellence and rigor enhances the value of a University of Minnesota degree. Our researchers attract about $800 million in funding to our state each year. That puts us eighth in the nation among public institutions for research funding, and that's remarkable considering our state's population is only the 21st largest in the country. Our research mission attracts some of the world's great scientists and investigators. We have a history of developing cures, medical devices, seat belts, and new strains of apples and wheat. Currently, we are a national center for researching food safety. We are working on cures for diabetes and Alzheimer's and for developing new nanotechnology processes that could aid Minnesota's manufacturing sector. University of Minnesota research funding, mostly from federal research organizations such as the National Institutes of Health and the National Science Foundation, support about 16,000 jobs annually in Minnesota. Research funding teaches our young scientists, our students, how to be great scientists. Our partnership with the state of Minnesota is critical to the health and vitality of this great institution, our University of Minnesota. We provide an exceptional return on investment. For every dollar you here at the legislature and the governor invest in the U, we return $13.20 to the statewide economy. The university significantly impacts the economy through expenditures, government revenues, and the employment and personal income of residents. Beyond these financial benefits, the U is preparing the workforce of the future and creating a stronger Minnesota. And I would like to add, we are extremely thankful for all that the legislature over the years has provided to the university. We are confident that we have stewarded your investments wisely. I want to particularly mention today that your most recent bonding decisions help construct our innovative, student-focused science, teaching, and student services building. Also, this past summer, we were pleased to receive part of an $83 million project for physics and nanotechnology, $51.3 million from the state, and that project is already significantly underway. Those dollars are not earning interest in an account somewhere. They are being spent today to put Minnesotans to work and to purchase Minnesota-made products from Minnesota suppliers. Another critical project, the Biomedical Discovery District, is well underway, on time and on budget. We have completed three projects, the Center for Magnetic Resonance Research and a combined cancer and cardiovascular research center. Today, I'm pleased to announce the plans for our fourth building, a Center for Infectious Disease and Microbiology Research. The U has exceptional strength in these areas of science, and this new facility promises to help attract funding and world-class talent. Your support of the Biomedical Discovery District is nothing short of a game changer. It is in these state-of-the-art labs that Minnesota will lead the way in finding cures for the diseases that afflict us. Our capital request this year emerges from a diligently thought-out six-year capital plan. That plan, approved by our Board of Regents, prioritizes projects with consideration of strategic academic priorities, facility condition assessments, campus master plans, and our financial and debt capacity. The projects that we are advancing this year in our capital request have been thoroughly vetted. They strategically advance our academic research and outreach mission and are financially prudent. Our capital request for 2012 is shown here. It totals $169.5 million, a relatively modest request in historical terms. Let me now walk you through each one of these elements. First is, as usual, our Higher Education Asset Preservation and Restoration, or HEPR, funding request. The university is home to more than 850 buildings with more than 28 million square feet of space statewide. Compared to all other public entities, the University of Minnesota's facility inventory includes the oldest buildings. 70% of the buildings are more than 30 years old. More significantly, about a quarter of our buildings are at least 70 years old. Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, about a quarter of our buildings are at least 70 years old. To fulfill our academic mission and prepare graduate students who are ready to work in today's high technology, business, research, and production environments, our facilities must be at the cutting edge. We simply cannot train tomorrow's generation of workers in yesterday's laboratories or classrooms. To extend the useful life of our infrastructure, we request $90 million for HEPR. This request will support 75 projects on all five campuses and throughout our research and field stations. Those HEPR projects touch everywhere in Minnesota. The HEPR projects are prioritized to improve safety and accessibility, extend facility life, and improve energy efficiency. In this way, our HEPR request is much more than about bricks and mortar. These investments are critically important to strategically reducing operations costs, leveraging external research funding, and enhancing student access. Let me turn to the combined heat and power plant request. And this list of HEPR this year has been characterized as not very sexy, and it's not. It's very much bones and muscle to drive the backbone of our system. This heat and power plant combination is critical to the heating and energy needs of the university's Twin Cities campus, especially as it affects our academic health center and research efforts. Currently, the Minneapolis campus relies on the Southeast Steam Plant for 100% of its steam, and this presents a vulnerability for the campus. Today, the university's Minneapolis campus includes about 18 million square feet through 163 buildings with growing heating, cooling, and electrical needs. The university anticipates a shortage in boiler capacity for the Minneapolis campus beginning in 2015 due to increasing demand and aging equipment. The old main plant is currently decommissioned and is the ideal location for a second source of steam production. We propose adding two 7-megawatt natural gas-fired turbines as a combined heat and power system with heat recovery steam generators. They would replace inefficient World War II generation coal burners. We would also construct systems to support a future chilled water cluster plant and an additional natural gas boiler. Our next request is for the Itasca Biological Station and Laboratories, which, like no other location in our state, lives at the convergence of three ecosystems: our pine forest, hardwood forest, and tall grass prairie. Affiliated with the College of Biological Sciences in the Twin Cities, which attracts the state's most qualified young scientists, The station has brought tens of thousands of students, teachers, and scientists to this place near the headwaters of the Mississippi River. As modern as the science is that is being explored there, the facilities are World War II era. This project will consolidate functions from three deteriorating facilities into the new campus center, a 12,000-square-foot year-round facility with laboratories, classrooms, offices, and an auditorium, all well-equipped with the latest technology. This project will create 12 full-time, year-round jobs and be a living laboratory for 130 students and faculty. The Itasca Field Station and laboratories are as essential to the university's research as the most sophisticated molecular biology laboratory. It will respond to increased demand from increasing enrollment in our College of Biological Sciences and keen interest in preserving Minnesota's fragile environment. Built in 1886, Eddie Hall is the oldest building on the University of Minnesota's Twin Cities campus and is on the National Register of Historic Places. While the exterior of the building has been stabilized previously with HEPA funds, it is no longer fully functional. The capital request is twofold. First, we will rehabilitate Eddie for the admissions program. This will improve accessibility for students, as currently the international and transfer student admissions programs are located in underground Williamson Hall. This phase of the project will create approximately 20,000 square feet of office and student service space, add fire safety features, and provide major structural repairs. It is important to make the university a welcoming place for students. In 2011, the Twin Cities campus served over 2,000 new transfer students and over 2,300 international undergraduates, with the majority of transfer students coming from our colleague schools in Minsky. The international students that come are a powerful source of new brain power for Minnesota. The second phase of the project is to reconfigure three buildings, including part of Eddie Hall, to strategically provide approximately 100,000 square feet of alternative workspaces. Finally, two outdated buildings will be decommissioned, saving $1.1 million a year in operating costs. In Eddie Hall, we will develop an alternative workplace strategy that is a growing trend in the private sector. It's aimed at limiting space constraints and reducing costs while promoting peak performance. This transformation in the workplace is a result of employers' greater ability to provide technology to allow employee mobility. Minnesota companies are already experiencing benefits from this kind of space, and 75% of the participants in a General Mills pilot of this idea said they would not return to a traditional workspace. We also understand the state of Minnesota is exploring alternative space usage as you examine the future of this building. These example photos from General Mills demonstrate strategic shared space layouts that fulfill employee needs, use less space per person, eliminate empty offices, and help retain top talent. And now for our Duluth project, Madam Chair, if I may, I would like to turn the microphone to University of Minnesota Duluth Chancellor Lynn Black.
Whenever you're ready, Mr. Black, welcome to the committee.
Chair Fischbach and members of the committee, good afternoon. Certainly an honor for me to be with you today and to be here with President Kaler to speak with you for a few minutes about the University of Minnesota Duluth's American Indian Learning Resource Center, an important part of the University of Minnesota's bonding bill request and essential to transform learning for our students. I want to take the privilege of introducing UMD student Mike Hartley. I can't see Mike because of the pillar, but he's over here to my left. He is an American Indian Studies major from West St. Paul. Mike represents the diversity of the American Indian programs at UMD, in which students from all walks of life and from all cultural backgrounds are enrolled. Also here today is Rick Smith, director of our center, and Tad Johnson, who's chair of the American Indian Studies Department. At some point that's appropriate, if you would like, I'm sure that Mike, Rick, and Tad could answer your questions about the benefits that this center will have for students and about the need for this new building. The need is certainly great, and it's essential for UMD and those we serve. This is a project that was previously passed by the legislature but vetoed by Governor Pawlenty in 2010. Currently, the American Indian Learning Resource Center is housed in a small space and our more than 20 American Indian programs are scattered and squeezed into spaces throughout campus. Consolidating all of these programs under a single roof will improve efficiency, effectiveness, and transform what we do for students. UMD, with a record enrollment this year of 11,800 students, is a crowded campus, and this new center will provide some space relief. It will include new classrooms, a library and computer area, and offices for student support services and for faculty, as well as large gathering spaces for a variety of communities. And areas currently occupied by American Indian programs across campus will be turned into classrooms and other spaces that will serve UMD students. Moreover, UMD has the second largest American Indian-specific library in the Upper Midwest, and UMD's Tweed Museum of Art owns precious native artifacts. This new center will provide space to finally display these items, which are now housed in boxes and stuffed on shelves in various places around campus. UMD is well known nationally for the size of its American Indian student community and the number of American Indian physicians who are trained at UMD in our medical school. Obviously, this new facility will serve non-native students as well, as the majority of students taking American Indian classes at UMD are non-native students. Support for the new center comes from a wide variety of organizations and people. In December, the Minnesota Chippewa Tribal Executive Council voted unanimously to support the project and committed itself to help raise $1.1 million to support the project. It is anticipated that the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council will endorse this project also. In addition, the UMD Student Association and other student organizations, as well as the Duluth Chamber of Commerce and APEX, a private sector-led business development engine for Northeast Minnesota and Western Wisconsin, have also voiced their support. Chair Fischbach and members of the committee, we thank you for this opportunity to provide you information about the American Indian Learning Resource Center. It is an important project for the University of Minnesota Duluth and for the students we serve, as well as for American Indian communities throughout the state.
Thank you, Mr. Black.
Good night. Madam Chair, members of the committee, it is important that you know that each of the five projects that we have presented to you today will help fulfill our mission of delivering the best possible academic experience for our students, increasing our ability to retain and attract top researchers and their grants, and generating statewide economic returns, including job creation. The University of Minnesota is mindful of the budgetary pressures that you and all of your colleagues face. But I feel strongly, as you would expect me to say, that I feel there's no greater investment that this state can make than in its research university. And we are, of course, committed to investing $40 million of our own bonding capacity to partner with the state on these projects. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm honored to be here today to represent your state's only research university. In the past, you have partnered with us to move forward, and I hope you will be able to do the same this year. We respectfully seek your support of our capital request. I and my colleagues would be most happy to answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There are a few questions. Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chancellor Black, as we look at the investment, the $11 million investment in the American Indian Learning Resource Center, the $3.7 million from the university. So that, tell me again, that a portion of that's going to be raised by the Native American community?
Chair Fischbach and Chair Fischbach and Senator Saxhouse, yes, we do have a commitment to help raise those funds of $1.1 million. So that $1.1 million would come from the university share.
Then I Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I sometimes puzzle over this issue, but because for years we've tried to do the reverse. But do we also segregate when we bring those programs that are in 20 parts of the campus into one place and not have the integration that has often been the goal. I just would like your comment on that.
Chancellor Black.
Chair Fischbach and Senator Roblins, it's an important question because certainly that is not our goal with this project. Our goal is to provide suitable space for these very important projects that now are scattered around campus and in space that is simply not adequate. The facilities will, this facility will include classroom space that will be general use classrooms as well as for the American Indian programs. So we will have students from throughout campus regularly in this building for a variety of purposes. It seems to be the best way. If perhaps we had a lot more money and opportunities, we could go about renovating various spaces on campus to meet the needs. But certainly combining them into a central location that's better suited for their needs, it seems to be the best option.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. Just on another question on the Itasca facilities, and I'm wondering, it's in a pretty remote location, beautiful location, but could we be starting the steps to form a new campus somewhere? I guess I'm wondering what the future plan for this is. I mean, you're moving 12 staff there and 150 students, and will those students be in graduate level programs? Will they all be done with their undergraduate courses so they don't have to take English and math and they're just focusing on science at that point? I'm just wondering if pretty soon we'll need to bring up the other programs. And I'm not looking to establish a new campus, I'll tell you that right now. I think that might not be financially feasible at this point in our state's fiscal history. So I'm just asking, what is the plan?
President Kaler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Roebling, I assure you this is not the nose in the tent to start a new campus at Itasca. That is certainly not on our plan. This is a facility that can be used ideally throughout the year to provide an experience for both undergraduate and graduate students that is very difficult to replicate elsewhere in our system. The ability, for example, for all of the entering students in College of Biological Sciences to go there for a few weeks in the summer and really immerse themselves in the ecology and the environment of that site. And for it also to be a location, a field base, as it were, for graduate students or other researchers who might be interested in the plants and ecology of that neighborhood. So it very much is a field station model, not the first step in building a campus.
I believe Senator Latz, you had a question.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. President, I'll ask the same question I asked of the Minsky system relating to prioritization between HEPR and the other individual projects.
President Kaler.
Chair Fischbach, Senator Latz, thank you. I had oddly enough anticipated you might have that question for me as well. And we would look carefully. The HEPR distribution, which I do believe is in your packet, does touch every campus and many outreach and other stations across the state. And we would look carefully at setting those priorities vis-a-vis the amount of money that ultimately was available for HEPR. I will tell you that the steam power plant, our second listed priority, is in some sense also of the HEPR flavor. It is an investment in infrastructure for the institution, and it is very important for the Minneapolis campus. We have a priority sorted list of projects for HEPR. One is on the Minneapolis campus, one is in St. Paul, one is in Duluth, others across the system, and so we would look carefully at the most appropriate use of those HEPR dollars once an amount was targeted, and we'd be happy to have that conversation.
Senator Latz.
Just to follow up, if you were, would you prefer to have all the money in the form of HEPR, or would you prefer to have some of it divided out to some of the other specific projects?
President Kaler.
Madam Chair, Senator Lotz, the steam power plant is of high importance to us. So having the ability to build that on a line item basis is important. So that would be my preference versus a single large number only in HEPA.
Further questions from the committee? Was there anything, Vice President O'Brien, that you wanted to add? I noticed you joined us. If you were just there for backup, that's fine, too. But if you have something you want to add.
Madam Chair, thank you. I think I might just add to the President's comments in response to Senator Roebling's question, and that is at the Itasca Biological Station, there are buildings that have been there for 70 years that we're actually replacing. So these aren't new buildings. They're replacement buildings. And the reason that the program is growing, there will be additional staff there. As the President mentioned, we have a growing number of students in science, technology, engineering, and math. The College of Biological Sciences programs are growing programs, and so we really are going to be using those buildings more vigorously with that enhanced program. But actually, almost all of our requests are to fix what we have and not build new buildings. The only new building in our request is the American Indian Resource Center in Duluth.
Thank you. If there aren't any further questions for President Kaler or Vice President O'Brien, there are a few other folks who did sign up to testify just to give us some insight into these. Thank you very much, both of you. Thank you
Thank
for being
you.
Here
Madam
today.
Chair.
I really appreciate it. We do have a short list of folks who wanted to testify. First, we have Jeff Ditburner with MSCSA. Ah, there. I'm sorry. I couldn't. It's a crowded room. Thank you for joining us whenever you're ready, Mr. Ditburner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Fischbach, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Ditburner with the Minnesota State College Student Association, representing over 100,000 public two-year community and technical college students. Thank you for the opportunity to address you this afternoon. It's a privilege to reintroduce myself to the committee as the president of MSCSA. I've had the chance to meet most of you in my capacity as vice president, and I know that you all share the goal of our mission to maintain the highest quality, most affordable, and most accessible higher education for our students. In regards to capital projects, our message is simple. Fix it first. We would like to see the legislature follow Minsky's bonding list as much as possible, but with the emphasis on HEPR projects that will keep our facilities and classrooms warm, safe, and dry. It's no wonder that HEPR is ranked number one in importance on Minsky's bonding request. The $110 million request ensures that the system keeps up with its deferred maintenance backlog. This backlog has reached $775 million, including the $650 million of the HEPR funds. Funding HEPR projects and making progress on the backlog will avoid costs due to neglect, help keep tuition low, and help meet the demands of Minnesota's workforce. When HEPR projects are not funded, it only increases the costs associated with further deterioration and decay. Campuses are forced to delay critical maintenance projects or pay for them through the use of campus reserve funds. This incurs unnecessary costs that could be avoided through preventative HEPR projects. With average tuition and fees at our two-year colleges continuing to be the third highest in the nation, the HEPR projects benefit our students by helping to mitigate the tuition and fee increases associated with new capital projects. As it was mentioned, unlike line item projects, no debt service is assigned to Minsky, which relieves this pressure on future tuition increases. Once HEPR is fully funded, we encourage the legislature and the governor to support Minsky's capital budget request. The selection process for these projects is a thorough and arduous task, which reflects the response to the demands of Minnesota's workforce. If Minsky is going to continue to contribute to Minnesota's educated workforce, it is necessary that we have the infrastructure to meet industry demands. Once again, MSCSA is encouraging you to fix it first and protect what we have before we fund other projects. With that, I conclude my remarks, and I will stand for any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
I've got Amanda Bardonner from MSUSA.
Hello.
Thank you, whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon, Chair Fischbach, Senators. I'm Amanda Bardonner, State Chair of the Minnesota State University State Association. I'm a senior at St. Cloud State University, majoring in international business and marketing.
Do I get to say go Huskies?
Yes, exactly. We appreciate your support. I appreciate the opportunity also to be here today and to discuss really the Minsky's capital budget request. Though this is the first step in the process, our association really looks forward to working with you, the Senate, and Governor Dayton's office to really talk about our bonding needs as a system and all of the projects that you have seen presented before you today. Our students support the Minsky Board of Trustees priority list as presented earlier, and we are particularly interested in seeing a priority placed on HEPR. We obviously need to protect our state's previous investments in our facilities and maintain the access that we have as students. The $110 million HEPR request will help replace the roofs, the boilers, the HVAC systems, all of those not-so-pretty things that we see, but all the things that we really need to keep our buildings functioning. The HEPR dollars can be put to use immediately and get our local contractors back on our campuses. If funding for the HEPR projects is not placed as a priority and funded at a substantial level, the current backlog will only increase. Projects can only go on for so long without being replaced and then transferring those costs to the universities and therefore the students. At a time when student loan debt is at an all-time high, we cannot afford to push these costs back to our students. The HEPR projects will help provide the environment and the facilities necessary to educate and train the workers needed for Minnesota's recovering economy. The goal of our colleges and universities is to expand the access to an extraordinary education at the best value for Minnesota, and a high-quality facilities play a key role in that work. As the process moves forward, you have a partner in our association, and we look forward to working with you, and we'll continue to be here talking about the importance of not only HEPR, but also the bonding process. And so I'll stand for any questions if you have any, but thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you very much coming down. I have Carolyn Hayes, David Bennett, and Patrick McGuire from the U of M. Thank you very much for joining us. If you could just introduce yourselves for the tape. Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, committee members, I'm very glad to be here today. I'm Caroline Hayes, a professor of mechanical engineering at the University of Minnesota, and I'm going to also introduce my colleagues with me today. There is Mr. Patrick McGuire, an alumnus of our Bachelor's of Mechanical Engineering program. He is now a laboratory manager in 3M's Traffic Safety Division, and his work ensures motorist safety worldwide. And also we have Mr. David Bennett, an entrepreneur and a current graduate student in our department, a non-traditional graduate student. So early in his career, he founded a Minnesota engine company, Biphase Technologies. He sold it in 2000, but he wasn't ready to retire yet. So he returned to graduate school at Minnesota in our department in 2009 because he wants to keep on getting the education he needs to create newer, less costly, and cleaner burning engine technology. So they've agreed to come with me today so that we can provide you with some examples of what HEPR funds will do for the students at the University of Minnesota and through them for the state's businesses and its economy. So together they will describe why it is that companies need for 21st century engineers to be educated in 21st century facilities, and also why our current infrastructure is an impediment to our ability to educate excellent engineers and fuel Minnesota's economy. And I also want to remind you that while I'm giving you examples from engineering, mechanical engineering in particular, because that's what the three of us know, these examples are representative of what HEPR money can do for the university throughout all its departments and throughout all its campuses. So with that, I'm going to give the floor over to Pat.
Thank you and welcome. Just identify yourself for the tape, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Patrick McGuire. I'm an active alumnus at the University of Minnesota and a 31-year employee at 3M. Over my career, I've worked for successful small startups, large governmental agencies, and, of course, 3M. I'd like to share some of my experiences with you explain the value of University of Minnesota education. The success at each of these employers was dependent upon the depth of training, creativity, and experience of their employees. The University of Minnesota graduates are prominent amongst each of these employers and affect our lives every day. For 100 years, the world of mechanical engineering was the world of steam locomotives, simple agriculture equipment, manual labor, and slide rules. The University of Minnesota's engineering facilities were largely built to serve the development of these industries. Today, the world is quite different. Robotics, automation, nanotechnology, biomedical technology, rapid prototyping, design by analysis, and other modern research, design, and manufacturing methods used in industry have leapt past many of the facilities available to students at the University of Minnesota. Global economic forces at work in our era are relentless. Both large and small employers are more dependent than ever on the breadth and depth of their engineering talent to create economic, environmental, reliable, and safe solutions to the world's problems. Most everything you see around you each day was created by a mechanical engineer. The University of Minnesota's Mechanical Engineering Department has, for more than 100 years, prepared the youth of our state to meet these challenges. There's nothing like a close-coupled relationship that industry can establish with the University of Minnesota. Engineering is a very hands-on profession. You cannot successfully teach with books alone. The hands-on practicum only available with a modern facility is necessary for success of students and industry. For the economic health of the state, I urge the committee to meet this challenge and invest in the future of the state of Minnesota with the reinvestment in the University of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Bennett.
Madam Chair, committee members, I'm David Bennett, the oldest graduate student in mechanical engineering. I'm here to give you an example of how our current infrastructure is an impediment to a 21st century education. I returned to graduate school in 2009 to gain the theoretical know-how to design a fuel system to utilize the newly discovered supplies of natural gas in the upcoming generation of American truck engines. We are the only American university working on such a project. Already, 7 patent disclosures have been filed with the university's Office of Technology Commercialization. These would be university patents. However, I can't test even portions of this new system in the current 1948 building because the laboratory ventilation and elevator are not up to the modern code. Furthermore, it is not possible to update one lab at a time because code requires that to make one change, we must bring the whole building up to code. HEPR funds will make it possible to bring the lab to a level where this basic research can be conducted and younger engineering students can be educated in this new technology. Thank you. If you have any questions.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Thank you very much for coming today. We really appreciate it.
Madam Chair, committee yes. members, if I may, I had one summarizing comment.
Oh, certainly. I'm sorry.
So President Kaler said early that HEPR is not glamorous necessarily. I beg to differ. To give you another example, we have so not only is it that Dave can't test his brand new amazing engines in our building. I mean, he's allowed to for 2 minutes before the ventilation is overcome. But we have things like, to use a technical term, a gazillion-watt solar simulator to test new solar devices and solar energy. But you can't just take your gazillion-watt device and plug it into the outlet of your 1948 building and expect not to blow the fuse. So HEPR money is absolutely glamorous because it allows us to do the glamorous things that we need for our students, our companies, and the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have one final gentleman signed up to testify, and it's John Larson with the IFO. Thank you. Just identify yourself for the tape, and whenever you're ready. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Fishback, Senators. My name is Donald F. Larson. I'm a professor at Minnesota State University, Mankato, but I'm here in my capacity as the president of the interfaculty organization, the IFO, which represents the faculty members of the seven state universities of the Minscu system. I'm both pleased and proud to follow the presentations given by Chancellor Rosenstone and Associate Vice Chancellor Yolitz and our student leaders, and to also let you know that our Board of Directors and the IFO fully endorse the priorities of the system bonding request, and we ask that you give it your full and complete consideration. I, too, would follow, I think, every single speaker who's come before me to emphasize the importance of HEPR funding. I think that many of our faculty members would be hard-pressed to be able to spell out what the letters in HEPR stand for, but we certainly know what it means. We know all too well what the lack of HEPR funding has meant to us. We know what it can do for us when it is provided. This is about the health, the safety, and the comfort of the students we teach, of ourselves as we work in our offices, of the support staff who help us to make sure that our students learn and that they advance the goals of the system, of our universities, and of our departments and programs. We know that even cosmetic improvements can have a significant impact on our ability to recruit and retain students. Also, vital to our system, our universities, our programs, and I believe to the state of Minnesota as well. I could go on and offer you examples. I could go on to speak about the needs for this funding, what can happen if it is not provided, but I believe that Chancellor Rosenstone and the other speakers have already articulated that very well. We're certainly available for further information if you desire it, and I will stand for questions at this time.
Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much. And I will just tell I really appreciate everyone being here, and thank you for everyone being here today. I think it was very informative for the committee. And are there any further comments or questions from the committee? Seeing none, I will just say that our next meeting is Wednesday, February 8th at 3 o'clock right here. Same room. And thank you again, everybody, and we are adjourned.